This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, and it is all presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you along for the ride for the next hour on Sirius 162, XM Channel 207, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and available anywhere you get your podcasts each and every week. Trainer Todd Fincher is certainly no stranger to this Trainer Talk program. Having first appeared on the show in February of 2021, he returned a second time the following year, just after his Senor Buscador captured the Grade 3 ACAC at Churchill Downs. Today, he joins me following the biggest win of his career, and once again, it was the stretch-running son of Mineshaft who delivered the special moment.
Saudi Crown, who has the advantage from National Treasure. Ushbatasoro from a mile back continues to stay on. Also staying on strongly is Senor Buscador. Out in front, Saudi Crown with 150 metres to last. Still has the lead, National Treasure. Ushbatasoro late on the scene and right down the outside. Senor Buscador, the lead is taken by Ushbatasoro, but right on the line. Senor Buscador might have tipped him out. Certainly the rider thinks so. Senor Buscador and Ushbatasoro over the top of Saudi Crown and National Treasure. And those were clear from Dermasot Agarque. Crown Pride was next.
What a moment for Todd Fincher and for the connections of Senor Buscador. Todd is with us now for the next hour here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Todd, congratulations. What a moment.
I've heard that race call 100 times, and it never gets old, I'll tell you that.
I'm sure it doesn't. Take me back to that moment. What was going through your mind as you're watching Senor Buscador continue to gobble up ground through the stretch?
Well, we really didn't have – we stayed in the paddock area because there's so many people stacked in there. We're afraid we wouldn't be able to get back to our seats, and so we didn't really have a good view. We were watching the Jumbotron from the – from the paddock, and it was hard to pick him up because he was so far back. And then I saw him go behind Ushbatasoro, and I said, well, that's not good. And then he got him back on the outside, and then normal stretch, you kind of time it out in your head, and you're thinking, well, he's going to maybe get third or fourth, and then just kept coming, and it seemed like the wire would never get there. And then he finally got up and right at the last jump and just made it amazing. Amazing feeling.
It seems like you've made a habit of describing what you just outlined here a moment ago with Senor Buscador. Didn't know if he was going to get there. Maybe he's going to be third. Maybe he's going to be second. Maybe he's going to win the race. It seems like every race he runs, because he comes from behind, you're experiencing those same emotions.
Yeah, and you just, when a horse comes from that far back, you're like, heck, is he going to even run today? You have no idea. And then once he starts running, now he's got to maneuver through all the horses he gave a head start to. And rarely does that turn out to be an inside trip. And then horses tiring in front and weaving in and out, kind of. So, yeah, you just never know what to expect, other than he's going to try. He always tries hard, but you never know what to expect with him. You know what's going to happen, but it's just when they get that far back, it's a different feeling. I guess we're getting used to it now, but it's one of those things like, well, is he going to try it? Is he going to get there? You're so far back, it's just a weird, weird experience.
He picked the right time to get there.
Yeah.
And the right race.
Yeah, I mean, it was like an explosion of emotion right when he got there, because, you know, he was never in front. It wasn't like he opened up two lengths at the 16th pole and you knew you were going to win from there on out. You never did we see him winning the race until right the last second. So that was a burst of emotion just came out in everybody. It was unbelievable.
After the race, Todd, you said, "I wanted him to prove just how good he is, and he did." Was there a sense of vindication for Senor Buscador after the race?
It was total vindication for the horse. We've always known how good he is, and after we've competed in some of the best races in the world and seen what happened and all the excuses that we had to make for him, and not getting beat very far. And it was total vindication for the horse. People, everybody's got an excuse when you get beat, and we're tired of making excuses for him. Nobody really wants to hear your excuses either. So it was total vindication that he's proved that he's the best. He can run with these horses, and he's right there at the top.
After finishing seventh in the Breeders' Cup Classic last November, he came back and run, and he finished second in the Cigar Mile. Then he finishes second in the Pegasus World Cup and now wins the Saudi Cup. Is it possible, Todd, that at age, six, Senor Buscador is just getting better?
Well, the reason he was an awesome two-year-old. I mean, I think a lot of people remember him. He was ranked in some polls second, third for the Kentucky Derby. We had a little injury and we had to stop on him, and then we had him ready to run about almost 9 months later, and then he had a major stall accident, and I think that's what's kept him from getting to be as good as he is. I mean, as he's showing now, I think it might have been lingering a little bit and not quite letting him be 100%, and I think that is that took so long to heal. It took a year to heal up good enough where we can train him and do all that. So I think that's a possibility, and then some misfortune, and just he's been a very unlucky horse in different situations, and I think he's healthy and he's finally, finally healthy, and he can show what it, he can run with the best, and I don't think it's an age thing. I don't think he's getting slowing down any at this age, but I think he's been good all along.
When he was dealing with some of those issues that you just talked about, was there ever a time when you were uncertain you were going to get him back in the barn?
Well, when he had the stall accident he got a major hawk infection. And it's the worst I ever seen. I mean, at one point I was just hoping it would heal good enough that he could survive. So it was that bad. It was a terrible, terrible injury. And there's a point I thought he'd never run again, but there's also a point I wasn't sure he was going to survive it. So, this is unbelievable.
The Daily Racing Forum wrote an article about the race after his victory in the Saudi Cup, and they pointed out the fact that his pedigree was tailor-made for that race, really, because his dam's name is Rose's Desert, and she is by Desert God. So if you just look strictly at the name and the pedigree, it seemed like Senor Buscador was set to run a big race and have his day in the sun in the desert.
Yeah, I never looked at it that way, but that makes sense. He's trained in the desert before too. He was broke and learned a lot of his early training here at Sunland Park, which is quite a bit of desert area around here. So, the Southwest. Everything worked out perfect, but I didn't see that article. But yeah, that makes a little sense.
And he's still in the desert. He is pointing for the Dubai World Cup as his next start. That will come in 17 days on March 30th. Tell me about what you're – I know you're back here in the States now, but what you're seeing from him, hearing about him as he prepares for the Dubai World Cup.
Yeah, he worked on Tuesday morning over there and had a really nice work. He's not a big workhorse. He doesn't you know, he just works average when you work him by himself, and the rider was very happy with him. So he worked 101 flat yesterday morning. So that's pretty good for him on going solo like that. So that just shows us he's doing really good. Looks like he pulled up good this morning. And my assistant over there is very happy with him.
Who is your assistant that's with him now, Todd?
His name's Oscar Rojero. He started working with me about the second or third year I started training. He's been with me ever since. So it's been 25 years he's been with me.
Wow. What makes him such a good trainer of his own and such a good fit with your operation?
Well, he knows our operation inside and out. He's been a big part of our operation since basically the inception. So he understands exactly what we do, and he knows horses very well, and very loyal and dependable guy, and excellent exercise rider as well. So yeah, he kind of can do it all.
How's he enjoying his time over there? I'm sure he's enjoying it.
I think he likes Dubai quite a bit. So I think there's more things to do in Dubai than there was Saudi Arabia. But yeah, his spirits seem good. So everybody's happy.
Yeah, keeping the staff happy and the team around Senor Buscador happy will certainly keep him happy going into the Dubai World Cup, and that's a big plus. Talking with trainer Todd Fincher here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Todd, tell me a little bit more about Saudi Arabia and that experience.
Well, I mean, you couldn't ask for any more. You got a victory in the richest race in the world with a horse that's been dying to get vindicated. Validated, you know, so that all was great. We flew in on we left on a Wednesday around noon, and with the time change, we got there Thursday night pretty late. So we didn't do much around there. We went to the races for a few races, kind of check it out on Friday, and then back to the races on Saturday. And after the race and the conference and everything, after everything worn off, and went to the hotel and come home. So we didn't really do much in Saudi Arabia, but we're planning on going a little earlier to Dubai and watch him train up to the race, and hopefully have a little couple day vacation out there and check out Dubai.
Good for you. Jockey Junior Alvarado is coming off of a tremendous couple of seasons, and last year was magical for him. That continued with Senor Buscador in the Saudi Cup. Tell me about Junior and why he's such a good fit, and the ride that he gave Senor Buscador in that race a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, Junior's, you know, when we went to New York, we didn't know who we were going to put on there. We weren't really interested in keeping the, you know, flying a jockey across the country to ride him. You know, Franco did a good job with him, but we just decided to pick a rider, a hometown rider there, and me and Mr. Peacock went over our options. There were five or six jockeys trying to get on him, and we both settled on Junior Alvarado. He rode Cody's Wish, and they're the same running style, and they, you know, somewhat the same horse. So we just thought it'd be a good fit for him, and he's done a great job, been very professional, worked him every time he could, every time when he was on the East Coast. So he really liked the horse, and he has a lot of faith in him, and he's done a good job for us.
The race in Saudi Arabia was a one turn race. Do you feel like maybe that's better for Senor Buscador than two turns, even though he's run some big races around two turns?
There's two things that's necessary for him to run his best race. And it's, one, there has to be an honest pace. Well, I guess there's three. You got to have a fair racetrack, too. There's a lot of speed bias tracks in the USA. I felt like that track was fair. Saudi Crown was on the lead and barely got beat, and we were at the back of the bus, us and Ushba. So it wasn't that the speed was strong. So the pace is very, very important. But we need a fair racetrack. We need a decent pace. And you know, when you're going we're always worried about traffic. That's always a problem, whether it's one turn or two turns. When he was in New York in the Cigar Mile, he got in tons of traffic. So that was a one-turn race. So So it just basically depends on the traffic and trip he gets.
He's the last horse bred in partnership by the late Joe Peacock and his son Joe Peacock Jr. That made that night and that victory all the more emotional. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, very special for the Peacocks. You know, that's a personal thing, and great family they are. And I'm sure that made the emotion a little stronger for them. But I was emotional too. I ain't been hit with that type of emotion maybe ever in my life. So that type of emotion hit me strong too. It was just like, finally, I don't have to make excuses for this horse anymore. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It's a special thing. And to have a horse like this who started in races at Remington Park, I remember winning the Springboard Mile. I think we talked after that race. And as you said, he was one of the horses that people were talking about for the Kentucky Derby before he had his setbacks. What do you remember, Todd, about the very first time you laid eyes on Senor Buscador?
He's just a horse, you know. He come into the – you know, we do all most horses in my barn. We start from the ground up. We get them as yearlings and break them ourselves. So I saw him from early on, and he to me was just a horse. He didn't stand out in his works. You know, we worked him 5-6 times January, February before we decided to turn him out and let him grow up. You know, he's a May foal, and it's. We had no plans for him early. He wasn't precocious, and he didn't do anything wrong, but he wasn't real impressive that early in the year. And then when we brought him back, he just got better and better, grew up quite a bit and got better and better. And we knew he was a very nice horse before we ran him, but you hope to get one as good as him. But we've had lots of horses we thought were nice horses, and most of them that we think turn out to be nice horses, but not top of the world type of horse. So we're very happy for him.
At what point in his career did you finally start to say to yourself, okay, maybe we have someone or something special here with Senor Buscador, a horse that really could be that top of the world caliber type of horse?
Well, when we run him the first time, we didn't have any options. He'd been ready to run for so long, and we couldn't get a race. And so, had to haul him to Remington. We were in New Mexico at Zia Park, so the only thing offered was a 5.5 furlong, which we knew was way too short for him. But so when he blew by that field, and you know, they ran fast and they're speedy horses, and he blew by them, you know, so that was impressive. And then you never know. You see a lot of horses, a lot of talented horses that just end up being off the pace sprinters. So you never know until you get the test. And the Springboard Mile, you know, he walked out of the gate, gave him a huge head start, and, I mean, he blew that. He ended up blowing that field away. So that was there right then and there. We knew, I mean, that was a big emotional day because that was impressive. You know, you see a lot of horses that win races, and you're kind of impressed by them. But that race was super impressive. So that's when we knew.
How did you deal with the – you know, we say this game has the highest highs and the lowest lows, but when you get the news that you're going to have to miss the Kentucky Derby, give him some time off, how does a trainer deal with a gut punch like that?
Well, when you, if you're in this business, you get a lot of gut punches, so you learn to deal with it. I try not to get too high. I mean, even though you got a super horse, you just try not to get ahead of yourself and let your emotions go crazy, because there are so many things that can happen, and they're young horses at that time, so they're not as sturdy as they are when they're 5 or 6. So you're always worried about working a horse and how they come back, or running a horse and how they come back. It's just, you see the younger horses, you know, with small injuries pop up all the time. So that time I probably handle it better now than I did then, just with maturity and being around it more and more, that you just don't let the highs get too high, because then the lows are too low. So we try to stay more even keel.
That's very interesting. Are you a different trainer now, Todd, than you were back in 2020 when Senor Buscador first started his career?
I think I'm a little different as time goes on, just because you learn, you're always learning in this game. You never know it all, and anybody that says they know it all is lying to themselves, because you always learn something new. So obviously the more experience, the better you become.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's probably the only horse in the history of thoroughbred racing to pull off the Springboard Mile Kurabat Handicap Saudi Cup Triple.
Yeah, that's never going to happen again. I'm going to go on record and say that too.
Pretty, I mean, it's amazing. I'm sitting here right now looking at his race record on Equibase, and you see the Springboard Mile, then you see that Risen Star, then you bring him back in an allowance race, and okay, that's not unusual. Then he goes all the way through to the Breeders' Cup in 2022, to the Dirt Mile. You bring him back at Sunland in a black-type race that listed stake, Kurabat Handicap, and then he goes right into the greatest stakes again. So that's kind of the way, at least looking at this on paper, the way you like to bring your horses back, give them a race that's going to build their confidence and then move on from there. Is that right?
Yeah, not just build their confidence, you know, put them in an easier spot where you don't have to just drill them so hard in the mornings where, you know, have them so fit where they have to come back against top quality. You can, it'd be like a Alabama that plays a UTEP for a first game of the year. You know, you want to get the feel of everything, and you're not going to be peaked out the first race back. So you just, it's a progression, and you want them to get better each race as you go on. You know, he won the Curabo, and he was probably 85, you know, talking about peaking 80-85%. So we knew that was good enough to win the race, and he was coming off a bleeding in the Breeders' Cup that year. So we didn't want to go too hard on him. We wanted to just make a progression and get better as we go, instead of being, you know, just have to work him so hard to be dead fit the first out. So it worked out good. He come up a little short in the Oaklawn Handicap last year. He made a winning move, and just basically against those type of horses, he wasn't quite at his peak, but he ran a good race, and then the progression continued on through the year, and he's just gotten better and better.
I'm glad you mentioned the name of that race at Sunland too, and gave me the proper pronunciation. Kurabo, not Kurabat. Kurabo. Was Kurabo a horse? Is that who the race is named after?
Yeah, it was. He probably ran back in the 80s. He was, and what's funny is he was, that horse had the same running style as Buscador. He would get way back in the back of the pack and just make one big run past him. And he was a very popular stake horse in the New Mexico circuit back in the, I guess, I'm not sure. I watched him run in the late 80s, maybe 90. So I think he had a long career and won a lot of stakes races in this circuit, and he was just a very popular horse.
Do you train a closer differently than you train a speed horse?
No, I think you train them all different. I mean, you train them, you know, they all have different quirks, and some horses are great workhorses, some horses are a bad workhorse. You have to make little subtle changes on them all. I don't think there's a one size fits all.
You know, Todd, I remember when you first joined me on Trainer Talk back in 2021, and we talked about you growing up in Denver before moving to Albuquerque when you were in high school. And then, of course, you spent time riding races as a jockey and then moved into the training side of things. Did you ever look back on what occurred in your life in those days that led you to this moment? And just, it's incredible to think about where you started and where you are today.
Well, I don't know if I look back at any moments. I think it's a culmination of all the moments, you know. Growing up in the racing business, that's what you wanted to be when you grew up on the racetrack. You know, you want to be a jockey, period. I mean, I had no real aspirations of being a trainer. I wanted to be a jockey. You know, I wanted that to be my career. Every year in school, I was the runt. I was the smallest kid in the class every year, every year, and then between 10th and 11th grade, I went from 5'1 to almost 6 foot. So I thought my jockey career, I thought that was for sure going to be my career, and then that put a big damper on it, but managed to make a 10-year riding career and had a blast doing it. And then, you know, obviously what comes next, you know, what are you going to do? So I started out trying to be a trainer and started with a few horses, and here we are today. You know, I'd rather be a jockey, but this is the second best thing. So still on the track and still doing what I love.
Do you still get on some horses at all in the mornings, or are you on the pony just watching your horses?
I haven't been galloping horses in quite a while. I used to gallop all of them, but now it's just too much going on, and so I don't get on them anymore. I just ride the pony.
Your career was pretty successful, too. You rode, I guess, 576 winners before you had to move on to the training side of things. When you were in your prime and you were really riding well, how much would you have loved to have been aboard a horse with that late kick like Senor Buscador?
Yeah, and when I was riding, you know, we rode everything. I won 300 and something quarter horse races, too. So, even in Albuquerque, they'd bring in, at the state fair, they'd bring in for 2 days, they'd have mule races. We even rode mules a couple times.
So did you really?
We would ride anything, yeah. But as far as the thoroughbreds go, we never, in New Mexico, back when I was riding, we didn't have anywhere close to that quality of horses around here. You know, it was, you know, the purse structure was terrible. You could go to California, claim one for $8,000 and bring it to New Mexico, and he'd win every stake around here. That was how bad the quality was back then. It's obviously gotten much stronger. We got way better quality now. But quarter horses back then, yeah, we had the best in the world, which we still do. So I got to ride some outstanding quarter horses, but the lower level thoroughbreds is all we had back then. You know, obviously I rode some pretty nice ones, but nothing like Senor Buscador. Yeah, I would have loved to rode many horses as good as him, or even one, but we never got those quality horses around yet.
Whenever a jockey is aboard a horse that comes from far back, the way Senor Buscador does, we always hear, oh, well, they have to time the move right. They have to have a clock in their head to make sure they move at the right time and get that horse to the wire first. What does that mean, Todd, having a clock in your head?
Yeah, you know, that's true. You know, you got to get your horse in a rhythm and just keep them there, and then know if they're going to give you a quick turn of foot or they're going to make a gradual run. In the case of Senor Buscador, it doesn't matter. I mean, the horse does it. I mean, you can ask Junior. He's a couple times tried to get him, you know, after about a quarter of a mile race to kind of start picking it up a little bit, and he won't do it. He'll just put his head back in his face and tell him, leave me alone, you know. You just got to leave the horse alone. He knows what he's doing. He just gradually starts picking him up, you know, and then only thing, you know, once the race is getting towards the end, he'll respond to the rider when he really, but if you start asking him too early, he's going to do what he wants. So the only thing with Junior's kind of figured out is, you know, just when to ask him for that one late punch, because his stride's so big. He's going to get closer as the race goes on. You know, by the time they hit the 3/8 pole, he's already made up 6 or 7 lengths just on his natural stride. But it's just up to Junior when he wants to really hit that turbo boost.
Todd Fincher with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Todd, stay with me. We've got to get to a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk more about some of the other horses that you've had the privilege of being around in what is now a fantastic career as a trainer following that big career as a jockey. Todd Fincher on Trainer Talk continues next here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Nominate now for this year's Phasic Tipton Selected Yearling Sales. The July Sale. A strong market for precocious and athletic yearlings that attract the sport's leading end users. last year, 40% of yearlings sold brought $100,000 or more. The 103rd Saratoga Sale. The crown jewel of American yearling sales, Saratoga set new sale records for the second year in a row, including the highest priced yearling sold in the world in 2023.
Tice upstairs, $4 million even.
New York Bred Yearlings, the number one marketplace for New York breds, held during the Saratoga race meet. Selected sales, superior results. Visit selectedyearlings.phasictipton.com to nominate now and rise above the crowd at our 2024 Selected Yearling Sales.
It's time to get ready for the 2024 Thoroughbred season at Woodbine Racetrack, the number one turf track in North America. Season runs from April to December with over $62 million in purses with an industry-leading stakes program including two Canadian Classics, the Grade 1 Million Dollar Rico Woodbine Mile and the Million Dollar King's Plate. Woodbine offers top safety-rated racing and training services, plus world-class facilities. Make Woodbine your home turf this season. Learn more at woodbine.com.
Perennial leading consigner Eddie Woods once again offers a strong consignment at this year's OBS March 2-Year-Old and Training Sale, March 12th to the 14th. With juveniles by promising freshman sires, Authentic, Complexity, Echotown, Game Winner, Global Campaign, Higher Power, Improbable, Instagram, McKinsey, and Promises Fulfilled, you'll be sure to find your next winner at the Eddie Woods consignment. Visit eddiewoods.com.
There are plenty of thrills at Gulfstream Park with live thoroughbred action Friday through Sunday and simulcasting 7 days a week. Join us on track for weekend stakes races and make plans for opening day of the championship meet on Friday, December 1st. Dine trackside in 10 Ponds with an elevated view of the track and grab a cool cocktail in the Carousel Club. For reservations, tickets, and more, head to GulfstreamPark.com.
Well, Phasic's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Phasic Tipton's has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're gonna have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Phasic Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair, and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here comes Senior Buscador. His run has begun with a quarter mile to go on the springboard. Joe Frazier grabs the lead coming off the turn, six furlongs, a minute 12.51. Joe Frazier up front. Cowan is free, and so is Senior Buscador on the outside. Senior Buscador, he was last going to the turn. He's first with less than a furlong to go. Senior Buscador letting him roll in the springboard, and he'll pull clear to win it by six. Cowan is their second, battle for third. Sapphis Day and Red and Wild in a photo.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this edition, visiting with trainer Todd Fincher, the trainer of Senor Buscador. That call you just heard coming from the 2020 Springboard Mile at Remington Park. It was the second career start for Senor Buscador. He goes all the way from the Springboard Mile to the Saudi Cup, that victory occurring a few weeks ago in Saudi Arabia, and it was a special one for Todd and for the team. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program and Todd's recollection of what that moment was like, and looking back on so many of the top moments in the career of Senor Buscador, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast there. You can do that too on every podcast platform. So however you access your podcast, type in Horse Racing Radio Network and follow along with Trainer Talk and with all the programs we bring your way each and every week. Well, when Todd Fincher joined me on Trainer Talk for the first time in 2021, his runners had banked nearly $31 million in purses. Today, that total stands at more than $44 million, nearly $45 million in purses, and much of that due to Senor Buscador, who has now earned $10,573,000 in that tremendous career. 7 wins from 18 starts, but none bigger than what happened in Saudi Arabia a few weeks ago. Todd, appreciate the visit as always. Had a lot of fun in the first half of the program looking back on the big horse. And you heard that call, the springboard mile, and Senor Buscador throwing the knockout punch to Joe Frazier and all the horses that were in the race that day. Who knew where this career would go at that point? Pretty special.
Yeah, that race call and that race gives me chills too. That announcer did a good job. When he first called his name, they had turned down the backside, and they called Senor Buscador, and he said, you might hear from him later. So that was a pretty good call. So that still gives me chills listening to that race call as well.
Fantastic. What a great way to describe it. And that was exactly what occurred. And we've continued to hear from Senor Buscador over the past 4 seasons on the racetrack. And it's such a delight. Outside of the big horse, and we'll call him the big horse now, outside of Senor Buscador, which other horses have you had the privilege to be around in your career that you're never going to forget?
Over the last few years, it's been unbelievable. We had a mare named Slammed. She was actually a New Mexico bred, and she won the Grade 2 Jockey Club of America at Keeneland by 6 lengths. So she was special. She had a pasture accident that tore up her foot, but she still had to overcome all that and turned out to be an awesome horse. And then we had a horse named Flying Connection that run in our first Kentucky Oaks last year, so that was good. So we got a filly coming this year named Candy Isle. She won 3 stakes and barely got beaten at Sunland Oaks here the other day, and she's at Oaklawn preparing for the Fantasy. So very fortunate to be getting better horses, quality horses here last few years. So it's pretty exciting to run with the big boys.
Does it go hand in hand? What I mean by this is when you start having success in those big races against the big boys, as you just mentioned, does it translate to getting better horses from owners? Do they say, hey, this trainer, he's red hot, he knows what he's doing, I need to send him some of my better horses? Does it work like that?
Well, I think it'll be a snowball effect. The people that have believed in me for a long time have went to Kentucky and bought yearlings, you know, and now that we're having success, they're buying more, you know, not so much new people. You know, you'll get a new person here and there, but the confidence that the owners have in me has brought a few more horses or opportunities to our stable.
You mentioned Slam being a New Mexico bred. Tell me a little bit more about the program in New Mexico and how much it's progressed over the past several years.
Well, New Mexico bred used to be laughed at because, you know, we didn't have near the quality of stallions or mare power, and that's gotten better over the years as well. You know, New Mexico has a great state bred program with incentives and huge stake races all throughout the year. Every track we go to has stake races, stakes program for New Mexico bred. So it's a great program. Our quality's gotten better. You know, it's obviously not Kentucky, but we a lot of people went to Kentucky and bought some mares and bred better, and just overall program has improved. So we got a New Mexico Breeders Association adding money to certain races to make them big. We have one race that's $350,000. We have 2 coming up, the one Oak and one Philly, one Oak and one Derby for New Mexico Breds coming up at Sunland. Each purse is $250,000. So they've improved, you know, everybody's worked together, and it's starting to culminate into a pretty good program with definitely better quality horses.
I remember talking with you on that first Trainer Talk show kind of in depth about a horse named Runaway Ghost, who, in my opinion anyway, was really the horse that got you off and running with your training career. Really special horse. Tell me more about Runaway Ghost.
Yeah, he's Senior Buscador's oldest brother, so
yep.
Oldest sibling. So, he was more precocious. He was a little more aggressive and used to want to run off to the front and was ready to go early. You know, I sent him to California, I think in March or April, to Mike Makowski to start his career because he was ready to go and nothing really for him around here. And obviously, I couldn't take just one horse out there. I've known Mike a long time and trusted him, and he did a good job with him. And then he come back to me, and we went through the series here at Sunland Park, and the horse never disappointed us. And he was good for a long time, too. So he was a great three winner. I think he made 700,000+. So pretty good out of a New Mexico bred mare.
Mm. Yeah, in the first half of the show, I asked you if you felt like winning the Saudi Cup was vindication for Senor Buscador, and you said absolutely. It was it was all about vindication with that win. He showed how good he really is. He showed everybody. And then we talked about the gut punch you received when he got knocked off the trail to the Kentucky Derby and had to be sidelined. That was the same thing with Runaway Ghost, if I recall, too, right? Wasn't he scratched from the Kentucky Derby right after his final work before the race?
It wasn't his final work, but it was one of the works leading up to the Kentucky Derby that he ended up with a fracture shin.
Yep.
So that was a gut punch. But, you know, it is what happens. You know, you just have to take care of the horse. You can't try to push on or try to put a Band-Aid on it. And, that was a gut punch, too. But, like I said before, we get a lot of gut punches in this business. So we just learn to take them, and we do our best. And that's we've done it long enough. We know how to eliminate whatever risk we can, but you can't eliminate them all.
How great has this family been to you? Of course, you trained Rose's Desert, the Dam of Runaway Ghost, the Dam of Senor Buscador. This family has been so, so good to you, Todd.
Yeah, Rose's Desert was a standout on the racetrack. She was unbelievable. Everybody knew she was the best, and she made a lot. You know, she won a lot of stakes races. She was very good to us. Still holds a special spot in our heart for her, you know. And then every one of the foals that's come through have all been winners, all been stakes winners, except for one's only ran one time, and she won that race. So she's a hell of a producer, and she was a hell of a mare herself. So it's been unbelievable coming from one mare that she can produce all this, all these superstars.
Yep, incredible. She earned $626,000 in what was a brilliant career for Rose's Desert. You had a couple of other fillies and mares that earned a lot of money for you too. One of those, Diabolical Dame, who earned almost $700,000. Tell me a little bit more about her.
Yeah, she was a great, great mare too, and she's had pretty good success with her baby so far. She is New Mexico bred, and actually when she was running, I was fortunate at that time, but it was kind of counterintuitive. I had four New Mexico bred fillies that were all by their own rights very nice fillies, so they beat up on each other all the time, you know. She was probably the best of them, but there was two or three that were right there with her, and she'd get beat by them sometimes, you know, just because of what would happen in the race. But yeah, that was crazy, as having to run against myself with four really nice fillies. But yeah, we took her to Del Mar and run her in a tough allowance race, and she got stuck behind a slow pace, and she got beat four or five lengths to some graded stakes fillies. So she was super nice too.
Yeah, Flying Connection. Flying Connection was another one, right?
Yeah, she's still going. Yeah, she ran in the Kentucky Oaks last year and led them for long ways and hung on and run six. So it doesn't sound that good, but she did all the heavy lifting and she's been excellent. She runs second in a graded race at Del Mar this year too, and she's been very nice. She's a very nice filly, and hopefully we've got some more races in her. She's there at Oaklawn too, getting ready for the Apple Blossom.
It's such a funny game. And when my wife and I have been involved with owning pieces of horses over the years, we'll talk about our horse running a really good fourth or a really good fifth. And maybe it's, you know, looking through rose-colored glasses sometimes, but most of the time it's not. You can have a horse run fourth or fifth or even sixth, as you just said, in a race like the Kentucky Oaks, and it doesn't mean that it was a poor performance. It could actually be looked at just the opposite and be a very good performance, even though they weren't in the top three.
Yeah, the situation, the race has a lot to do with it, and then obviously the competition. Yeah, I mean, Buscador in the Breeders' Cup runs seventh. Everybody says that's terrible. He only got beat five lengths, and his trip was not good at all. So, he didn't really run a bad race, as it looks on paper. So that happens quite a bit.
I want to apologize to Senor Buscador, because as I was coming back from the commercial break, I mentioned that his earnings were just over $10 million. They're actually $11,496,000. So I shorted Senor Buscador about $1.5 million. So I need to apologize to him and I guess to the entire team, really.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Who's counting? What's another $1.5 million?
Yeah, and money's great, but but the him proving what he is the validation, you know. That's what makes us the happiest.
Todd, take me inside your house or your office, whatever the case may be, wherever you keep your horse racing memorabilia, and put me there with you. What am I going to see when I walk in? What types of racing memorabilia?
Well, there'll be some win pictures and lots of trophies, but mostly, you know, we run in New Mexico, and like at Sunland Park, when you win a stake race, they give you a belt buckle. So I got tons of belt buckles on the trophy case, so that's, you're going to see a bunch of belt buckles.
What do you think your most cherished possession is?
I don't know. Maybe the Saudi Cup trophy that I haven't received yet, that's supposed to be coming in the mail. But that's a gold trophy that was really heavy. So I don't know if it's real gold or full half or what, it gold plated, but it's a really nice trophy. So that's the nicest trophy that I've ever received.
Where is that going to be displayed?
I think it's going to be in the on the TV stand, the case up above the TV, so we can look at it all the time. So if we ever have a bad moment, we can just look up and see that trophy and bring a smile to our face. But that's probably where I'll put it, not with the other trophies and buckles.
It's interesting to hear you mention, you know, if we ever need a, I guess I'll use the term, a pick-me-up, you can look at the trophy and remember that moment. Jude Feld, who did this program with me for a very long time, is a dear friend, and he trained horses for many years in California, and he would always talk about whenever things were not going according to plan, maybe he was in a slump or not winning as many races as he would like, he could go back and pop in the tape of a big race that he won, and it would automatically cheer him up and make him remember that, okay, yeah, I do know how to do this job. So it sounds to me like it's a little bit similar for every trainer.
Yeah, I mean, everybody goes through a little bit of slump, and those are hard days to take, but I mean, you got to look at your decisions and be honest with yourself and see if it was a decision you made or decisions you're making while you're in a slump, or just the way it goes, you know. So you have to be honest with yourself and correct something if you think it's wrong, and if not, you just gotta take those gut punches like we do all the time.
Yeah, just keep on moving forward, and that's what Todd Fincher has done so well for his entire training career, and he is with me now here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Todd, you come from a racing family. Tell me more about the family and how they reacted to the Saudi Cup win.
Yeah, everybody's happy. I mean, I had great support, not just from my family, but from the hometown folks. New Mexico racing community was ecstatic. A lot of people reached out and congratulated me. So a lot of support there, which is good to see and hear. And we grew up on the racetracks. We grew up on the racetracks doing the Colorado fairs, where you'd run at track 2 weeks and pick everything up, move to a different track and run 2 weeks. And there's hundreds of people, you know, that grew up on the racetrack doing the same thing. We had, my dad was riding, my mom was training, my brother's a few years older than me. We, you know, we grew up in the shed row, in the stalls with the horses. You know, it was, you ever watch a movie, Casey's Shadow, that's have some similarities on how we grew up, and not just us, but a lot of racetrack families grew up that same way.
Mm. Yeah, your brother, Rhett, described himself as a horse whisperer, and I think we talked about that a few years ago when you first joined me on the program. I wondered, has he been around Senor Buscador to kind of whisper some good thoughts in his ears before he went over to Saudi Arabia?
No, he stays in a different part of the country doing his thing, so he hasn't been around him much at all. So, no, Senor Buscador does what Senor Buscador wants to do. So, he's a little bit spoiled, but he's got a great personality and he's an outstanding racehorse.
What does it mean, Todd, when somebody is described as being a horse whisperer?
Well, they understand the. What I believe is they understand what a horse is telling you at all times. You know, you understand some of their emotions. They understand the right brain, left brain tendencies of a horse, and they pretty much know by their actions of a horse what they're trying to tell you. And I believe that's what it is. I'm not sure. I mean, anybody that's, you know, if you spent your life around horses and paid attention, you're gonna. You could probably call yourself a horse whisperer if you're really paying attention. So it's, you know, they can't speak. So you gotta pay attention to what their actions are.
Todd, what's the one thing throughout your training career that you're probably most proud of?
I don't know if there's any one moment. I think it's just, I'm proud that it's come from ground up, you know. It wasn't given to me. I didn't have 30, 40 horses when I first started. I think I've earned it. I think I'm proud of that. Probably more than anything is I've put in the years, not just the months. We put in decades to do this, and obviously it's growing every year. So I'm probably most proud of that.
Where do you see things going in the immediate future for the Todd Fincher operation?
I think I'm going to, this year, start expanding, taking a full stable instead of just a few horses over at a time. I think I'm going to set up shop somewhere as a full stable somewhere else and keep my New Mexico stuff going. You know, I hate to leave New Mexico for many reasons, but all my best hands, you know, which is a huge part of my success, is having the people that work for me are doing an outstanding job. And you can go somewhere else and you might find good help, but you're not going to find the people I have the trust in that's worked for me for years and knows exactly what's going on. It's just tough to do. So like I said, we break our own horses. So we have a team that does that, and we have a team at the track, and they're irreplaceable. You know, that's the one reason I like breaking my babies here in New Mexico, and weather's good in the winter, and I got outstanding help. So I think that's a huge advantage that I don't want to lose.
What other parts of the country would you consider opening up a stable?
Well, you know, California's not as easy travel for us. So we like California, like the weather there. Love Del Mar. Santa Anita's been nice too, so that's a good little circuit, you know. Go summertime Del Mar, and then you know, nothing's in stone. This is kind of what I'm thinking, and then go back to Santa Anita and then go back to Del Mar for the Breeders' Cup, and then after that, I don't know. You know, Oaklawn's obviously a huge draw just because of the competition and the purses and a lot of big races there as well. So not sure, you know, Kentucky's got a lot of great racing too. That's just a hard travel for me. So yeah. Don't know yet, but it's in the works.
Yeah. How big would you like to get? How many horses would you like to have?
I like quality. You know, you got to start with quantity first to get through to what you're really looking for. But, you know, at home, like right now, I'm carrying 95, but we're fixing to split off. So, I like to have a stable about 50 at a track. And then, you know, if I split off, maybe 20 somewhere. So, you know, if you're going to split off and go to a bigger track, you need to bring quality horses, not just a bunch of lower level claimers. So it'd probably be more like 50-20, you know, once we hit the summer.
And it sounds to me, if you're going to do it, you want to do it right. You want to be able to compete at the highest levels, or at least some high level races at those other racetracks. So you have to really, as you said, focus on quality over quantity.
Yeah, you can't go run. You can go run in the big races, but if you're going to compete, you have to have the quality horses. I mean, you can't make a 10,000 claimer stakes horse. So you're fooling yourself by trying to do that. So, yeah, every year is different. You got to hope you get those new young horses that are very talented. And like in 2022, we only broke two Kentucky breeds all year. And one was Buscador's sister, Eye Candy. She won her first race. And the other was Candy Isle. And she won three stakes in a row and barely got beaten to Sunland Oaks. And then this year we got much more. We got close to 20 Kentucky breds. So we don't know what's going to come from them, but I have quite a few I like. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see for sure. Todd Fincher here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Todd, we're into the final furlong. Just a couple of minutes left here in the program. I always like to end the show by asking trainers to let us know something about them that we haven't talked about yet. So any other hobbies or interests or things that Todd Fincher enjoys outside of thoroughbred racing?
Oh, I love playing golf. I just haven't seen my golf clubs in about 4 months is all. But, yeah. I mean, I'd love to be able to have the time once a week to go play golf, but it's just right now it's just a busy, busy time of the year. So haven't got to do that, but I love getting away from the track and swinging hard and taking my frustrations out on a little white ball. But I haven't got to do that much at all, none this year. So hopefully I get to Rio Doce, I'll get to play a little golf up there. But that's my hobby.
Are you a pretty good golfer?
No. It depends who you're – I mean, I'm a – probably when I was playing quite a bit, I was probably a 12 handicap. But as sparingly as I play now, I'm probably a 20. So I'd like to get back to where hitting it and just getting away, you know. I love the outdoors and getting out, hanging out with your buddies and get the horses off your mind for a little bit and play golf.
Well, Todd, I hope you get the opportunity to do that soon. It has been so much fun to catch up again and to talk about Señor Buscador. Again, congratulations on that Saudi Cup victory and all the best moving forward with the Dubai World Cup and all the runners you're going to have coming up later this spring and summer. We can't wait to see them do their thing.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Todd Fincher here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. If you missed any portion of this program, head back to the website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast of this show and all of our shows at horseracingradio.net and on every podcast platform. My thanks to Todd for taking time to be with me here on Trainer Talk this afternoon. My thanks to Lee Delapina in our Lexington studios. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.